Friends, the title of the talk is Altruism and Self-Development. If you look at it, it appears that these are two values and attitudes towards life, very useful for the progress of humanity. Of these two, self-development has become very popular. I mean, amounts to almost a craze. So people are just constantly nowadays, especially among the city life, concerned again and again regarding self-development. Last week, we just went through newspapers to see the advertisement regarding self-development programs and workshops. An organization called SOMS Spiritual Solution, workshop on Vedic Vastu and Feng Shui. Personal Touch Counseling Center, workshop for women and depression. Mikis Center, seminar on pranic healing. Prism Healing Institute, seminar on chakra meditation. And all this for a price. They are not freely available. You have to telephone them, take an appointment, so many numbers is only available, and to commercialize. They are trying to help you to become better, but ultimately they are making money out of it. So self-development, because people can take an advantage, taking the boom of this craze for personal development, that these centers thrive. There are beauty parlors and cosmetic surgical hospitals, there are gymnastics for muscle developments, there are fitness and health spas. Oh, that's too much concern with the body. And again, that also is a thriving trade. So in other words, this is just to tell you how the word self-development has been misunderstood. Mr. Jaj actually corrects at one place that we must not, as students of theosophy, must never use the word self-development. At best you can say self-improvement. And still better than that is called self-regeneration. You make yourself, regenerate yourself anew. Make yourself a new man. This is the idea a student of theosophy has to keep in view. So this development of self, but which self? Of course, it is concerned with our personal self, the self very familiar to us, we know it so well. We have our biodata, we have our identity card. That self is that about which self-development is mentioned. As against this, that a kind of a balancing force could be altruism. Which means, of course, altrui means the other. Altruism means a little concern for the welfare of others. So that instead of getting too much self-occupied with personal concerns, a while you can take interest in another. This is the burden of our today's talk, therefore. So coming to our civilization, we came across two quotations. It's worth going through those quotations. Our civilization, and this should be wrote 150 years ago, our civilization has developed the physical and intellectual at the cost of the psychic and the spiritual. At the expense of it, that is. That is, it's not that both are just balanced, one against the other. At the expense of the higher nature of man, we have been developing our physical potentialities and intellectual pursuits. So, a kind of a lopsided development of this civilization. No wonder there are brilliant intellectuals, but emotionally brittle. When Baba Atomic Energy was started, within the first 10 years, there were three top scientists committed suicide. And Dr. Baba was inquiring as to how it could happen. Brilliant intellectuals committing suicide. He established a center of psychological department in his hospital, specially to screen every single scientists working them to find out what is the thing which leads brilliant scientists to commit suicide. In other words, the emotional maturity has not been developed, and that intellectual development is done at the expense of this emotional development. That was what he discovered. And it was amazing to him, because he was himself a great brilliant scientist, Dr. Babu. So it appears that a lopsided development sometimes leads to lopsidedness, as it is called. But our immersion, although immersion, the philosopher, American philosopher, says, what is the true test of our civilization? It is not census, which means economic figures. It's not the sign of big cities, nor the crops, that is production, growth, GNP, that national development, but the kind of man, the quality of man that a country can produce. So if you say that developed nations as compared to underdeveloped nations and developing nations, they are all economic terms. If you look at humanity and break them down on economic terms, still you will find in the developed countries, this difficulty is always there, still there. So that the quality of man, the kind of man a nation produces, so that after this last 50, 60 years of independence, what is the kind of man we have produced? Leave aside what is economically, how great we have become. This is the test and the crux of an advancement of a nation. We had a little earlier a great thinker, a philosopher, like say Rajagopalachari, Radhakrishnan, the president of India. We had the great mystic like Sri Aurobindo. We have the great poet like Sri Rabindranath Tagore. Oh, you can give a long list of truly great men towards whom we can look up to and be proud of as a nation. We may have Birlas and Tatas and all those things, quite all right, nothing to be raving about. They are necessary for development of a nation. But the greatness of a nation, the test of a great civilization, where there is civility developed, that requires great teachers, great leaders, great morally applied leaders. That is the test and crux of civility. So, at once we must decide, when we have talked about self-development, we are talking about the development of the higher nature of man. That we are not at all concerned, of course, but not that we are going to neglect. See, we are not going to say that poverty is good. We are not going to say that, oh, it was okay, that starvation is all right, that the famines are okay. No, not at all. You are living the British during the famine for the famines. But after the British death, still the starvation death is still there. Malnourished children, death due to malnourishment is still there. Oh, you can go to the statistics and get astonishing records of the development that India is doing. I'm just talking about our country because we are Indians here, and therefore you must understand what is an Indian civilization. You have to be proud of being an Indian, yes, because of the great past. But what have you to say about this last 60 years of independence? What is our contribution? In what way we have unfolded the great potentialities which is lying at the core of Indian culture? Core of Indian culture, truly great. That core is lying away because of loss of values. So now, and we just come across recently, you see, we ask people as to how you choose your mate. I mean, this is the way where which you can find out how you choose your career, how you choose your partner in life, how you spend your leisure hours. This is the way we can measure out a man's maturity, the man's development, the man's culture, the cultivation, his really developed nature. The truly developed man is not merely an intellectual, is not merely a highly educated man, but he is cultivated. He is cultivated with the fineness of his nature, the refinement of his nature. It is to that extent sometimes the villager can be more refined. He may look too humble, he may hold his hand and talk to you. But this humility is spontaneous and natural. Not because you feel inferior towards you, But because he feels, he looks up to you, he expects you to lead him, to guide him. So this kind of humility is not humble. Where are our city humbleism about this humility? You know, our good day, sir, and thank you, sir, and all these are surface civilities. So our choices of marriage, for instance, is just impulsive or purely based on advantage. Where does my advantage lie if I marry this partner? How am I being advantaged in this situation? So the two families, especially when there is an arranged marriage, a lot of inquiry is made about the financial status, the economic status, the social status, and all those other things. Hardly concerned about the character, the temperament, the maturity, the development, the health. The health of the individual. Okay, nowadays people do concern about the health. But truly the health of the individual. Is this being inquired about in the choice of your partner? This is taking only one example. So this is what we say, in other words, that the truly developed, cultured individual is a mature person and an all-rounded person. He is not merely, he is not going to neglect his body. Because he knows that man is composed of physical body, his mental makeup, as well as his soul nature. And that all the three must have been juxtaposed and developed simultaneously. Not one against the other, not at the expense. We are not going to develop intellectually at the expense of our health. Nor are we going to go into gym and develop huge muscles at the expense of our sharpness of the wit. After there must be a juxtaposed balancing of temperament. That's why this is called integral health. When you say integral health, it means a total health. A multi-sided personality development. A development of a personality, yes, but it should be so well balanced that it should become a useful citizen. To that extent, one can be proud of his being our citizen of our country. So, coming to this, Eric Fromm, you see, in his being a psychologist, and particularly his research in science of behavior scientists, Eric Fromm coined just two words, what is called acquisitive society and productive society. An acquisitive society is this which is concerned with, of course, acquisitions, wealth, prosperity, on an economic level, on political level, on socio-economic level, and so on. But is that country equally creative, productive? Of course, production, as far as the GNP is concerned, yes. But have they produced truly great intellectual minds? Minds which are capable of thinking for themselves, as ETB says about education of children, that they must be made to think for themselves, and they must be free, moral, free intellectual, and above all, unselfish. This is a kind of education that the child needs. Whereas our education is completely geared to mass producing, you might say, intellectuals, maybe brilliant scientists, and so on. Even right from the school time, what is the kind of thing which is going on in the educational field? Mass production. And therefore the quality definitely suffers. So, coming to motivation psychology, we refer to motivation psychology because this psychologist deals with what is it that drives a person to act? Why should he reform himself? Why should he change himself? Why should he be altruistic? So it goes into the root cause of what is it that drives him to do it? What is it that motivates him to do it? So looking at that, they said that the basic human needs has to be satisfied for sanity of a man. Then his security should be given enough security for wealth gives security, position in society gives you security. Just necessary security every human being needs. Basic. Understandable. We appreciate that. As a human being, we need that. But then there have been people and are rare individuals, and Maslow found them in the top echelon of university. Only 7% of the people whom he called self-actualized individuals. He called themselves actualized because they have actually become what they are intrinsically. And we describe them as to become what one is potential. That they are capable of unfolding themselves, that inner potentiality, whatever it may be, artistic field or scientific field or musical field, in any little department of their life, in addition to their academic activity, they are capable of bringing out the best that is in them. So their goal is excellence. And excellence not only in one-sided excellence, because they found that it cannot develop, you cannot be one-sidedly developed, otherwise you may not be truly excellent. So this self-actualized being, another quality of these people are, they are a free choice. They are quite uninhibited. No external inhibition they require. They don't require moral constraints. That doesn't mean that they are irresponsible. This is another greatness about these people, that they were totally free. They won't look at book of ethics or moral injunctions. They will be guided from within, but with responsibility. They are totally concerned with responsibility to themselves and to the society. This is another characteristic of these people, that they were not merely intelligent people, but they were really inwardly morally responsible. We call it morally responsible, but to them it is a natural thing to be responsible to oneself and to the ones surrounding. And because they were responsible, they were concerned with the welfare of others. They felt that you cannot grow independent of the growth of others. You cannot make real progress without lifting others along with you. Somehow whether they came to this conclusion. So they were always concerned as to where they can find loopholes by which they can become useful citizens within their own surroundings. Not that they have become social workers and joined this, but they did real lot of good field work. And they would not hesitate to do the most menial work if it is demanded on them. This kind of spontaneity of action, uninhibited. If they love you, they love you with full heart. And they will not be ashamed to kiss you in public. You know, like that. You know, completely uninhibited from the bottom of them. Now this is kind of individuals who are yet responsible. And they are motivated somehow or other. They have discovered that they cannot grow completely because they owe so much to human society. They realize that what they have today is thanks to the labor of others. As somebody said that I am now standing on the shoulder of others. If I am tall, it is because now I am standing on the shoulder of others. I think Newton said that, the great scientist. Don't praise me, I am great, but it's because I am standing on the shoulder of others. So this kind of acknowledgement that I am now developed, thanks to the labor on the part of this institution. This institution is sustained by society, human society. So their concern was the welfare of human society because it's only this society which gave me protection. It's for the same reason that Socrates, when people contrived to escape from the prison, he said, no, nothing doing. If this society has built the laws to protect all these years of my life, there are laws which protect human beings, the law of the land. And it is the same law of the land which has now put me in this prison and which now wants me to drink hemlock. So the law of the land must be respected. Because it is the law of the land which protects common citizen of the world. And I will not break that law. So this is a kind of respect for the law of the land, in the sense that, of course, the law of the land is such that it will a rebellious type of a revolting law. Of course, you rise to an occasion. But other than that, although he was treated unjustly, and he knew at the heart of heart he was treated unjustly, to set an example that the law of the land must be respected. Now, these are the kind of self-actualized beings, and that they were concerned with the inner development. They were concerned with that which was there intrinsically in them. And that they were not exaggeratedly concerned, that they didn't want to develop themselves with the bitterness and the strength of the mind. But in ordinary things, in simple affairs, they were men of principle. At least they came across at least two such stories of very interesting stories. We can say that, and especially about modern film actors who did this. about Alec Guinness, who played an important role in that on Bridge on the River Kwai, a very well-known artist, very well-known. He had made lakhs of rupees because of his acting. He was such a popular man. So he was called by a very multimillionaire and said that, can you play a role in one of those advertisements in drinking? You just have to drink a little in front of the camera and you'll be paid $17 lakh. Just know I'm a teetotaler in the first place, so that I can drink. And even if you give me something else, I can't tell people to poison themselves by taking a drink. It's my principle that I apply to myself, which I should apply to others. A man of principle. The money was there in front of him. He refused to take part in an advertisement. I wonder how many of our actors and actresses are willing to do the same. This is an example of a man of principle. Alec Guinness. There is another instance of a General Robert Lee. During the American War, this American army was Confederate army was returning by a railway train. And of course, just coming back from the battlefield. And an old woman, a little poor woman, entered that compartment. But nobody offered her seat. She found the whole compartment was empty and nobody. But she just passed by General Lee. And he was reading his paper and suddenly saw an old woman. He instinctively got up and made her seat. Immediately the other soldiers got up and said, "General Sahib, I'm back here." And he just turned around and says, "I'm ashamed of you. If you can't respect a poor old woman, what is the use of showing respect to me?" A simple gesture of this kind. It means they are men of principle. So to develop oneself is to become, first and foremost, you have some guiding principles of your life. Without that, it's like a boat on a very stormy sea and you'll be dashed. So unless until we have got certain basic, fundamental, sensible principles. I'm not talking about exaggerated ethical morality. Morality is sometimes can be misused and misapplied by religious people. In terms of the true ethics, which is based on the true nature of men. So these are the men of principles, and they, in small matters, in small gestures, they showed their character. So it's the unfoldment of the character that is what is required. The self-development requires first controlling and conquering our lower nature with the help of our higher. In other words, there is in us the higher nature, which is useful to us, which is the guiding principle of our life. That's why this quotation, of course, the one that quotation in front of us, he says, it's almost the third quotation, the spiritual ego can act only when the personal ego is paralyzed. The spiritual eye in man is omniscient on his own plane and has every knowledge innate in it. So this is how the spiritual ego is described. It's an omniscient entity and on his own plane and has every knowledge in it, the central core of our being. While the personal self is the creature of his environment and a slave of the physical memory. So what is required is paralyzing. The spiritual ego acts only when the personal ego is paralyzed. Now this is a very strong word used by Madam Blavatsky. But it only makes you say that you have to make it ineffective. Not actually, you are not going to paralyze your body or paralyze your brain. The idea is to make it ineffective. It actually happened during sleep. It actually happened during Sushupti state. Our brain and our bodily activity are temporarily in equations. And therefore, the higher nature awakens in us, which then looks up to his parent. And a communion takes place between the divine ego and the individual ego in man. So the spiritual ego in man is that individual ego. The one which is the reincarnating permanent entity, which is the undying part of man. On the other hand, the personal ego is that which is the ego surrounding Mr. X, Y, Z, Mr. Miss, etc., etc. That which is evanescent, which is a dying part of our nature, which grows, which changes, which fluctuates, which is never steady. But the inner nature is not easily available to us. that it unfolds, it doesn't grow. What happens is, you can't say a flower grows, but flower blossoms. A flower blossoms means it blossoms forth. What is that in it intrinsically unfolds itself. Like a seed, which breaks down into a plant, and a plant breaks down into flowers and fruits. So this is a kind of an unfolding process. So the inner ego, the higher being, the higher part of our nature, can cultivate itself, can become available to us. Only when the lower is silenced, when it is making a lot of noise, when it is demanding too much from us. And see the nature of the lower nature, lower self, it is a slave of personal memory. This personal memory is the impression that you are constantly being bombarded with. Oh, we are exposed to advertisement, we are exposed to society. Continually the outward thing impinges on our consciousness, our newspaper reading. All this trash that comes and impinges us, remains as a memory and keeps us at the lower level of our consciousness. It's only when that is temporarily forgotten, put aside, and allow the higher quality of our nature, the poetic instinct in me, the best that is in me. But generally, instinctively, when you are reading my paper, suddenly you saw a woman, and his impulse was to get up immediately. Immediately. And although he came from a battlefield, mind you, as any other soldier was. So this one instant, that spontaneity of a good nature, then becomes a part and parcel of a true nature. This spontaneity of goodness comes when it is well cultivated. So then the impressions of the memory, they are being, as we said, they are continually impressed by these externalities of personal, social living, and then we are glamorized by it actually. So that this advertisement media is taking an advantage of it, and we are using the word glamour, which is psychological word actually. It is kind of actually hypnotizing our mind to make us see, if I've got a one car, I see another brighter and a beautiful more car. I would like to covet that. This is a kind of advertisement being going on, and it pulls people to this. So we are being, so the development of the nation through radio, television, and now of course every possible internet activities, where does it lead us to? This technological development has helped us to make the world small. It has its advantages. But then it has its other side too. It has made us slave to our sensuous life. The continually preoccupation with ourselves, the continual preoccupation with my culture, my development, my progress. And in a competing world, my becomes the first, right from childhood. That we have not outgrown our childhood. I remember my grandchild, when every time I come home, he says, Grandpa, tame su lavya? First question says, Mare mate tame su lavya? The child thinks, what have you brought for me? For me. We are not much better than that. We are almost at that level. Only as mature people. They are always wondering, what do I get this out of this? Now this is the thing which happens to us unconsciously also, because they become a part of our nature, all of us. But it's only when we consider that, no, we have outgrown those toys of life, that there are higher things in life, which we must value, and towards for which we have to sacrifice, that they are not easily available. So that yes, because for that, you have to refer to the another reading which is not there with you, but I can read this. Vishwini says, our constant failure to find any permanent satisfaction in life, why is it that we are not satisfied in life, that we want this, we want that, we want more and more? That we are not really satisfied with life. Our constant failure to find permanent satisfaction in life, which would meet the want or the spiritual needs of our higher nature, shows us plainly that those wants can be met only on their own plane, namely the spiritual plane. Which means the higher level of the mind. You see, why do I not find satisfaction? Because our spiritual needs are not satisfied. Because that inner need. And what is our inner need? You can ask anybody, you can say, I want peace and plenty. Because it's a peace and harmony. peace and plenty. In our prayers we always say peace and plenty. So the plentiness we always ask, but peace and harmony we don't ask. But there's other thing that we really need. We need freedom. We need freedom from the bonds of our own nature. See, not only freedom from the environment, not only freedom from political freedom or social freedom. Really, we should be free from our own. That thing which drags us down continually. Our own habits. Simple habits, really. You see, we have got the habit of sitting and sleeping in a particular way. Now, this student has a habit of having some cushion behind his back. Kind of habit. Comparing oneself, you're on the ground that, oh, I need it bodily. Justify it, but this is pampering to some extent. So we have continually been pampering ourselves with our needs, and there is no end to our greed. There is no end to our needs. The more you ask for it, the more you get. And the more you get it, the more you ask for it. So this is the kind of human nature. So unless until we prioritize from essentials and non-essentials, and then unless we empty the boat, as the Lord Buddha says, then only we can travel lightly. See, if you have a boat of life, if you are going to travel along the boat on a very stormy sea, that boat has to be light, otherwise if it is very heavy, we are going to get drowned. So we carry a lot of load on our mind, on our brain, on our body. Heavy bank balance, if you are a multi-millionaire, imagine, are you really happy? Ask any multi-millionaire. He said, I am happy, I am satisfied. He will say that. But perhaps at the end of the life, if you ask him, his last thought also is, what will happen to my money? What will happen to my sons and daughters? Will they quarrel among themselves? Which will happen sometime if you leave behind a lot of wealth behind you. So, wealth and prosperity does not always bring true happiness and peace. So the two spiritual need, and if we attend to that, and then how? There are only two ways of doing it. Self-development and altruism. The truly, honestly wanting to develop oneself, the true higher part of our nature. Seriously taking our own life in our own hand. That means making a resolve that I will not allow my life to be drifted away this way and that way, but I will be the controller of my own life. It's just like a car. You see, if your car is given to you as a present, if you do not know how to drive that car, first of all, you must have knowledge how to drive it. So life has been given to us as a gift, and we don't care for it, and we don't care how you must use that life. It's a precious gift. And therefore, only two sandals that you are told, why are we here? What's the purpose for which you are here? Are we here to eat, drink and then be merry for tomorrow we die? Or is there a greater purpose? We must ask ourselves this question, honestly, sometime in our life. In fact, that is a sign of our maturity. It's the day when we ask this question, why am I here? Genuinely. And wait for an answer. I remember a school boy asked his uncle, I was present there. Uncle, can a mogra become a rose? It can't be possible. Mogra is Mogra. It can't become a rose. He said, why? Mogra grows on a Mogra tree. Rose grows on a rose tree. The child was disappointed. When I asked the question, why are you disappointed? He said, that, supposing I am a Mogra and I want to become a rose, what will happen? But that you are a human being. You can change. Yes, you can change from within. You can be far greater than a rose. We can be far greater than others. So that human being is not like a little seed of flower. Human being has got in him an intrinsic possibility. This is what happened in front of me, I'm coming here. So the child was disappointed momentarily, and my uncle said, no, not possible, biologically not possible. Till you tell the child that, yes, the Mogra, there's nothing wrong to be a Mogra, because you are a beautiful Mogra all the same. But if you want to be a rose, that is something more beautiful, maybe the beautiful part of the rose, you can also become a rose if you just strive towards it. And you have in you the potentiality to become a great man. So that is one thing you lose sight of. That every human soul which is born with the gift of a great potentiality lying latent in it, waiting to unfold. These are the factors that possibilities, great possibilities awaits us. But we fritter our life most of the time in our personal concerns. Not that we have to neglect that personal concerns because we are made of flesh and body. But that neglecting, we are not going to neglect the body. Neither we are going to neglect our intellectual life. That intellectual life is not simple because God has given us this intellect, powerful thing. The rational faculty is a very useful faculty. That's what puts us out of, million times greater than an animal. But the rational faculty is always dear to our cunningness. It is used for that purpose only. Are we using this as Srivi says that our intellect will make a footstool of humanity if that man has not awakened morally? You can make a humanity as your footstool on which you rest your feet and stand up. If purely you are intellectual, that's what will happen. So in along with the development of intellect, if there is a development of an unfolding of the faculties, then it can be done. Now coming to altruism, we have neglected that part of the story. That history says that altruism is an integral part of self-development. That you cannot develop yourself without developing altruistic faculty in you. It's not only a value system, altruism is not only value, but it is a quality of the soul. That capacity to forget yourself and be concerned with the good of another, the well-being of another, that is altruism. There are various definitions of altruism. We refer to a dictionary, and it says it's a disposition with due regard for the interests or welfare of others. It also means awareness for the needs of others. See, it's a due regard for the needs of others. This is another kind of sensitivity, a kind of awareness. What the other person needs, as generally, immediately saw the poor woman, he got up, he saw the need, and he gave his seat. So this sensitivity to the need of others, we are so much preoccupied with ourselves, we have no time to look around and see what is the need of it. Even when we are bombarded with terrible news about bad things happening in the world, really sad even, it happens to somebody else as well. It doesn't happen to us. It's unless and until we momentarily, emotionally identify ourselves with the sorrow of another, even just for a while, a little bit, and it is touchless. It did not bring tears in our eyes, but it has made us feel a little sad. That is a kind of sensitivity, is altruism, thinking of another. The other quality is benevolent desire to promote good of mankind. That is going out of your way to promote, to encourage the good of mankind. And then it's a very tricky thing. What is the good of mankind? Where does it lie? Promoting the good of mankind, does it mean making a country wealthy or making a person wealthy? If I am a servant woman working for me, in what way I will promote her welfare? Well, I will be concerned with her welfare. What is happening to her life? I'm little taking a little interest in her development. I'm taking a little interest in her children, a little interest in that, without getting too much involved, of course. But how much to give even to a poor servant? A little thank you, just a little word of thank you is enough sometimes. Because that the person feels that you are acknowledging the good that that servant does to you. So this is kind of an altruistic benevolence you can show to another. Now, altruism is a doctrine by a French philosopher, Auguste Comte, in the 19th century. You know, he discovered it, he's a French philosopher, and he coined that word altruism. And then it was a social political theory, which states that the he says that society exists for the interest of the individual. That the whole society exists for the welfare of the individual, and therefore society must contrive in such a way that the independence and the freedom of the individual should not be curtailed. In other words, in the capitalistic countries, this is made use of very nicely and popularly. But communists have used it very cleverly. What they say is, all right, if an individual is a spoke in the whole wheel, then he should be made use of for the sake of the will. So for the sake of a society, an individual can be sacrificed. And therefore, a communistic ideology would be this, using this altruism as a doctrine that Conte is made use of by Karl Marx, saying that every individual is merely a part of the whole, and therefore he has to contribute to the whole, compulsory. This compulsion. Therefore, compulsory conscription during war, compulsory vaccination. This compelling, that it goes to that extent. So this unhealthy ideology can go astray. A reaction to that came another philosophy in Europe called individualism. This says that the chief end of society is the development of the individual. So the whole center is individual in the center, society is caters to it. To that extent, of course, an individual rights are preserved, etc., etc., it has its own benefit. But then it can also become individualistic, egoistic. Individual has to be preserved. That means I, the individual is very important, society is secondary. So individual must be given full freedom to make his own choices. But then there should be a limit to his freedom. So that in a capitalistic country, of course, it can be misused and can be misapplied. So either way, that can be a compromise. Just merely we're saying in passing that these two ideologies, they appear apparently opposite to each other, can be compromised by Eric Fromm. He says that what is good for mankind is good for men. So pitted against the society and the man, there is no contradiction, there is no conflict between the two. They both must thrive together and live together and progress together. So that each time an individual comes up, to that extent he is contributing to the growth of the society. And to the extent that the society becomes more developed, there are greater opportunities for the lower echelons of humanity to come up. So no wonder we must develop economically, so that the poor people can become little upper. They may be given an opportunity for jobs, etc., etc. So economic development necessary, yes. But it merely stops at that. So here it is said that what is good for the totality of mankind is also good for men. The vice versa is not true, huh? That what's good for one man is good for the whole. But then you must begin somewhere. It should begin with individual responsibility. Society, good is necessary, but it should begin with the individual responsibility, and he should be responsible to himself as well as to society. So that will compromise between this. My good and the social good. If there is a conflict, I must see to it that a greater good must be obtained. If in a committee of people, if large number of people say yea, then I must submit. That's what Socrates did. Large number of people say, yes, Socrates must be sacrificed. He said, all right, I submit. He did not defend himself. He submitted. This kind of submission is not cowardice. Understand it with responsibility. Similarly, you have to create conditions such that both individual progress as well as social upliftment can take place. Now, social upliftment means in a society where there is proper justice, proper freedom, also must take place simultaneously. And that all must benefit, and that benefit must be shared. Pooled equally, it can't be shared equally. Wealth cannot be shared equally. Because to the extent to your contribution, a laborer is worthy of his wage. That's what the Bible says. A laborer is worthy of his wage. The laborer must get what is worthy of him. If you have lifted 10 pounds of weight, it must be given to that extent. If you have lifted heavier weights, naturally, you have to pay more. So that is just giving a very trifle example. So the greater intellectual contribution to social welfare, you have to pay more. Okay, that has been misused by saying, oh, I'm a professional, I'm an advocate, I'm a solicitor, I'm giving you the brilliant, my every minute counts, I give you advice for half an hour, that much will be my price. A physician, oh, I'm giving you only that much time. You have to pay the price for it, because I'm an intellectual. So it can also be misapplied. So every good thing that you say can also be misapplied. That's why you require a lot of wisdom. And therefore, we require the basic principles of life, the basic understanding that we are here as co-pilgrims, as co-partners in life, that we share the same air, the same atmosphere, that physically we are made up of the same stuff, that intellectually too we are made up of the same common consciousness, and spiritually too we have the same origin, the Father in heaven. The soul of man, the spirit in man is exactly the same. The light that is in you and me is the same. That we have the common parent and that we are all brothers to man. And therefore the upliftment of an individual means an upliftment of the totality. But between the two, an individual must be total. It's only with the growth, because individual is such a tiny thing. He must be nurtured. That is why Mahatma Gandhi said, he didn't come to the first parliament, meeting of the first parliament immediately after independence, he sent a letter saying, telling them that whenever you legislate to the legislative council, whenever you legislate any legislation, please keep into your mind's eye the picture of a poor villager, a poor farmer. How is your legislation going to affect that poor man? This is the crux, that is the test by which how every single legislature, how is it going to benefit that poor man? So the concern for the poor man, the concern for the individual citizen, this is a kind of concern. If it is done, then that is altruism. So altruism is because, as it says, at one place I won't be going, there won't be any time to go to the building. But it says that when we are really concerned with others, when we really work for another, the veil lifts from your consciousness. Because the veil, our consciousness is continually being veiled by our personality, by our personal nature, by our preoccupation with ourselves. That momentarily self-forgetfulness, some inner purification takes place momentarily. So that yesterday says, each time you plant a rose in your neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed is removed from your own garden. A peculiar alchemy takes place. By concern with another people's happiness, you find something happens to you, you find little sense of well-being. A little. It grows. And it grows into a state where you become, when one becomes a center of tremendous influence. And without lifting a finger, you become auspicious. So wherever the person goes, he is an auspicious person. So auspicious that when there is a quarreling atmosphere, the atmosphere becomes one. Just by his very presence. Now this kind of ability to help others without lifting a finger comes to individuals who started in this small, small way of altruistic living, self-forgetfulness, concern with the welfare of another. You will end here with a marvelous, it's not there with you, but we came across in HPB's article, Modern Apostles. It is found in Lucifer, written in July 1890. To the noble soul, spending itself for others, those great words of the poet may be addressed evermore. This is the words of the poet. Take comfort, my son. Thou hast left behind powers that will work for thee. Air, earth, skies. There is not a breathing of a common wind that will forget thee. Thou hast great allies. What are they? Thy friends are exultation, agonies, even agonies, huh? And love, and man's unconquerable mind. So this is a kind of ideal, a noble gift that can come to a soul who spends himself for others. Thankful, only 2 minutes, so sorry, to answering questions if there is any repetition. Yes, yes.
So you said that regeneration, when you are young, TV you see, all TV, newspapers, radio, all unhealthy things they are showing images. Now how do you regenerate? You said be unselfish, but it's more like teaching comparison, competition in office, they are teaching you for self-interest.
True, true.
Now how to be unselfish? How to regenerate yourself?
If you talk about yourself, that's a different question. We are not talking about children.
So I'm talking about myself. Now when you become 12 years old, you attain puberty. You see these images everywhere,
TV, radio, newspapers,
all these
things. I don't know how to protect young people. That's a tremendous question in education. And this every individual in our family see that our children are so geared to television box. We call it an idiot box, fortunately. See? And we call it couch potatoes. We just sit there for hours together and watch it. But then the only protection is tremendous example of the parents. The way we treat our children, the way we handle our youngsters, in the school, in the colleges. See, this student, for instance, can remember his college professors, one or two. One of our professors actually wept right in the classroom when he see the class so much in disturbance that he pleaded, please be quiet, please be quiet. Here was a professor who had been to prison during this National Independence Women in the year 1942. And he pleaded, he says, he has just come out of the prison. And he wept, he says, seeing you like this, our country needs people like you, we want strong young men. You can't be here like this, he pleaded. And he actually wept. This one instance has touched me. You see, use like that. So if you have got a good teacher, one single teacher, yes, then your life can be changed. So then in a home, if you have one very good friend, a very good servant, who can give you a little good word here and there, only by slow bits and bits, you know, by drop, you can fill up a vessel. Similarly, drop by drop, you can change your character. So you can't change yourself suddenly. But one thing, we come back with a load from behind us. This is not the first time we are here on this earth. We have been reincarnating life after life after life, and therefore we have brought back with us our old past tendencies, which also impinges on us. At the same time, impingement takes us from outside of us. So there is a conflict, you might say, or balancing between the two. This maturity takes place in some people at a very early age. As I said, the child asks this question, how can a mogra become a plaga? You know, this little boy, age 12, asked this question. Hey, he had that inside, he wanted to become somebody better. He had that urge to become better. Now here is a child, you pick him up and see that he is handled well. So it is your and my duty to help individuals here and there, in the railway compartment, wherever you meet friends. Listen to them and give a little helping hand. Put in a very kind word. Do not contradict them. Even if they are too much interested in worldliness, don't suddenly stop them. They may be your own children, they may be your own friends. But just give them a little sight that there is something more beautiful than this. You can tell them. But for on a television screen, there may be something, a better channel than this. You can just ask them a little bit. A better channel is available today. So like that, a very polite way of doing things. But otherwise it's a very difficult task. You can't change others, but you can change yourself. That's the last thing. You can't reform the world, but you can reform yourself. Regeneration is a very, very long distant thing. You generating yourself anew, it's a very far away process. But beginning with ourselves, let us reform ourselves, begin with ourselves, the world will change in fullness of time. It's a matter of time. You must have faith. Because behind this world there are great ones, great Mahapurush who have already been watching the development of humanity. It is they who are concerned, not you and me. They are concerned with the growth of humanity, progress of mankind. And they will see to it here and there, good people like you, and they pick us up and guide us here and there. And therefore we are here today. That's why we want to learn from theosophy teachings of this kind. They are attracted to this kind of teaching, no? So this kind of attractive thing. Today at this very hour, many, many such centers are going on. Even in a worldly city like Bombay. Really good discourses must be going on, I'm sure. This must be giving out these ancient truths. So take the advantage of that. And it's a slow process, a slow grinding, because it takes a lot of grinding to produce a life. We can meet. Come. You can come and meet.